Before Destruction by Cyanon. Read by the author. I developed skills for mimicry, and I was a good show-off. I knew how to get attention, and I knew how to do it in a positive, funny way. George Carlin. In the early morning on a day like any other in Hell's Ring of Pride, a man toiled ceaselessly. More than a man, though. Indeed, one who existed before man was even a concept. A concept he'd attempted to tinker with, to disastrous effect. Deep in the center of the sprawling, faded white marble palisades of the largest mansion in all of Hell, Lucifer Morningstar, the damnation of humanity, was hunched over a table made of worn, pitted, and scarred oak wood, its working face a testament to centuries of experimentation and invention by the first of the fallen angels. While the room he toiled in was large enough to host a ball, the pale-skinned, waifishly thin and nearly platinum-blonde being was scrutinizing his work. From behind two rows of shimmering, dagger-like teeth came a long tongue that lapped just below one of the large red dots that marked either side of his wan face, giving him the look of a marionette of old. Sweat beaded his brow, and his piercing, golden-yellow eyes were squinting with an erratic perfectionist's focus on detail. The shining red pupils were beady, even with the sepulchral darkness of the chamber. All around him were piles upon piles of experiments. They made hills that, should one tread carelessly, would leave them buried by Lucifer's tests and prototypes. Some were faded, as old as feudal dynasties and more. Others were still glossy and reflective, recent products of the Fell Prince's mania. Over time, that obsession would, without his knowing, attract something. Someone. His whipcord chest was taking in and letting out only the barest gasps of air, as if even the lightest breeze from him would undo his hard-earned work. His red and white pinstripe vest and elegantly crafted white shirt were stained with an indelible yellow by hours, if not days, of sweat that had collected, dried, and come again over and over. His cold, dark hands twisted a jeweler's screwdriver with glacial slowness, even the briefest lapse in his fine motor control able to rend his newest masterpiece asunder. Satisfied with the minute adjustments to the internal mechanisms, he moved his hand back slowly, laying the tool in his lap so as not to disturb the table itself. Deftly, he extended those sharpened fingertips and grasped a pair of hooked tweezers, ones more at home in a surgical theater rather than a regular person's medicine cabinet. Hooking the points of the device through a pair of bespoke holes in a small, mirror-polished alloy plate not wider than his palm. His hands finally began to tremble. This moment would either solidify his success or be testament to his failure. Days, no, weeks of mentally exhausting labor lost. He felt like he held the sword of Damocles as the shadow of the plate moved over the rest of the work. He had to hold his eyes shut, the shining jaundice disappearing momentarily, before he opened them again. He cursed silently, the action that had meant to relieve him only doing him more damage, as the sweat that had begun collecting on his head and brow was now painted by his own eyelids across his eyes, stinging them furiously. He couldn't go back now. He couldn't even risk moving his other arm to try to mop away the dampness. He blinked again, over and over, until it looked, to any outside observer, that he was crying. In this intensely emotional moment, that wasn't just an affectation of the sweat. The idea that his designs could be undone at this final hurdle sent his soul careering into a pit of despair. Yet, as he swallowed hard, realizing how dry his mouth was from sheer dehydration, he hazarded moving just his eyes to look up, seeing on a far wall a portrait. Within it were three individuals, two feminine, one masculine. The tallest was not himself. That was, in fact, his beloved wife, Lilith, mother of sin. He was not even, in fact, the second tallest. He stood on the side opposite his wife, the median between the two having her shoulders held by either of her parents. Charlotte Morningstar. His beloved Charlie. Upon seeing her bright, dagger-toothed smile and features that were, in his eyes, the best of both her parents, his tears dried. Not now. Not when he was so close. With renewed focus, Lucifer looked down, seeing precisely where the plate would fit, esoteric designs and mechanisms awaiting their cover. He moved purposefully, slowly, carefully, but with conviction now rather than fear. He could hear the soft hiss of the mechanisms as they began to interact with the plate. Inches became centimeters, centimeters became millimeters. Taking a deep, finally confident breath after what felt like an eternity of holding it in, he smiled softly and relaxed his thumb and forefinger. The grasp on the plate now gone, it hovered just slightly out of full alignment. This was no error on his part. As the tweezers lifted up and away, the plate began to be subsumed by the rest of the piece, until the fit was utterly seamless, pulled in by magnets and gears as much as sorcery and incantation. There was a sudden ratcheting click, like something being wound to nearly the breaking point from within. Lucifer couldn't help but feel just the slightest bit nervous, even with the strength the thoughts of his cherished daughter granted him. Then, from deep within, the clicking ceased, and the faintest sound could be heard emanating from it.
Quack.
Tentatively happy, Lucifer dared to reach down and take the object fully in his hands. It felt like a mass of rubber, though it had much less give than might be assumed. It was rounded all over, with the imitation of a pair of folded wings at its side, and a small, whimsically beaked avian head. Tempting his luck even further, he gave the thing a short, firm squeeze. It began to glow, its already neon-yellow exterior beginning to shine with a deep inner light. The eyes, circular and stylized, shut in a way that spoke of a happy, joyful feeling. Then the sound came, filling the chamber with a resonant, harmonious sound.
Quack, 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 quack.
Over and over again, the duck in his hands honked out its elation at its recent creation. While it looked like any mortal child's bath toy, and shared the appearance of the thousands of others laid in messy piles all around him, it was anything but. He tossed it up, knowing that gravity wouldn't take hold of it. Indeed, it seemed to float on an invisible layer of water, swimming with small mechanical legs in the air, before returning back to his arms. A few carefully placed strokes of its plasticine back, and it let out a gout of sparks. While this might not have immediately seemed impressive, considering he'd made literal flamethrowers in this form before, it was in fact emitting magnesium-bright lights that, given just a moment, made a retina-burning impression of the outline of his daughter's face. The angular features, fashionable ponytail, and heart-melting smile unmistakable. Even as he closed his eyes, just as he wanted. A few more pats, and the duck closed its stubby orange beak, and Lucifer felt the tears welling up once more. They were already running over his red-dotted cheeks when he heard it. A sound came from somewhere behind a massive door at the far side of the workshop, like the sound of a thousand bedsheets being torn and cut simultaneously. Then there was a dazzling light that began to spill from under the door and into the chamber. At first, he thought he was being visited uninvitedly by the agents of heaven, here to harass him even further than they had millennia ago. He laid the duck down on the table, patting it on its head before grasping his barker's tailcoat he'd slung over the back of his chair, hoping to hide the worst of his disheveled appearance. He slicked back his gleaming hair as he approached the door, it falling messily back into its old place just as he realized something was different. The kinds of portals heaven used to rapidly move from place to place were open and closed for just as long as it took for the users to move. By now, he would have heard an army's worth of footsteps. But instead, he heard screaming, laughing, the rich sound of an orgasm, and the wail of a mother whose child had died in her arms. And the light was all wrong, too. Instead of the bombastic yellow-orange of the fires of righteousness that ringed a portal from heaven, these colors under the door were something else entirely. And they didn't stay the same for any appreciable length of time. The rapid, indiscernible blues, violets, greens, red, and all other manner of hue stung his eyes, even from this safe distance. He had been there the moment creation began. He had witnessed the birth and death of stars, nebulae, black holes, and wormholes. They looked as colorless as a dog's view of the world in comparison to what he saw now. The glow gradually dissipated along with the cacophonous sounds. All that was left in their wake was the sound of something fluttering gently behind the door, like a flag being whipped casually by a breeze. Not satisfied with the deluge of questions all this raised, Lucifer grasped the doors and flung them open wide, his strength and speed at pulling the massive barriers open belying a hidden, immensely powerful strength in spite of his seemingly diminutive and almost effete appearance. He saw it for only a moment, and even then, he could have chalked it up to a mere hallucination of his mentally overtaxed state. It was a being only slightly taller than his daughter, made up of what appeared to be dazzling blue cloth that had runes and letters sewn in with shimmering gold thread that he couldn't comprehend. No language of humankind shared these symbols, and they gave him an uneasy feeling, as if it would be in mankind's better interest if they didn't. The cloth itself was hovering slightly above the ground, wrapped around an unseeable, only vaguely humanoid shape, ending in a cowl that looked almost the mirror of the base of it, both of them voids that gave no hint as to what might be underneath. The same couldn't be said for the holes at either side of the torso of the thing, each one punch-outs for a set of four arms. One singular arm extended from the left, holding a staff, also dazzling with those same runes that hurt even his unholy eyes to view. It was wrapped with bones, skulls, and shamanic totems of unknowable provenance, topped with the beaked skull of some massive, clearly unnatural bird. The other side held three arms, each extending from the robes as if they were each socketed to a torso at an angle and closeness that refused the concepts of anatomy, or even physics. Even that was a difficult approximation of what he saw, as the hands seemed to meld together, split apart, and instantly shift positions. A set of golden bangles and dazzling rings appeared on one hand before moving to another. Fingers and joints appearing and disappearing with no appreciable pattern or consistency. These hands held nothing, a dagger, and a nimbus of ghostly, ethereal fire simultaneously, and not at all. Lucifer stepped back as the fire moved from the being's hand, engulfing it entirely, as if its sole act before him was to self-immolate in this nauseating, sense-sapping azure flame. All of this happening in the span of a blink. The father of lies stumbled backwards, the flames cold and scorching all at once. A bright blue smoke emanated from it, obscuring its form utterly, the fluttering sound of the cloth being moved by an invisible wind now gone. Then he heard it, a pair of familiar footsteps. They were ones he'd heard millions of times before. The way they struck the Venus marble flooring, second nature to him. They were his footsteps, after all. Lucifer shook his head as out of the smoke came a dark rod nearly shin height, clacking down on the marble, the sound seemingly an instruction to the smoke itself to move away and disappear. Out from the miasma came a figure in knee-high black leather boots, a flamboyant tailcoat, with a white top hat that, in lieu of a ribbon at its base, had a serpent coiled around an apple. The eyes that looked over at him were his own. the smile the same as the one he practiced in a mirror. Movement, mannerisms, all of it a perfect duplication down to the most minute detail. The only thing that would even give a hint to the fact that this doppelganger was not, in fact, the Morning Star, was his eyes. While they did have the same faintly glowing yellow sclera, where the irisless red pupils would be, were instead a pair of shimmering blue, looking like orbs containing that same chaotic smoke from a moment ago. "What in the absolute fuck are you?" Lucifer asked, his throat raw and untrained from not having actually spoken in days. The duplicate of him opened its own mouth and uttered something, sounding at first like some bizarre combination of Latin and German, like they were uttering an incantation to summon the spirit of some long-dead Nazi. It was clear, however, that this was simply the language it spoke the most often as it began speaking out a fountain of gibberish that seemed to practically devolve, getting more and more guttural, more and more sickeningly sibilant. Strangest of all, even though it seemed like this language was regressing, it was at the same time becoming more and more familiar. The drift of linguistics yet to come being brought back and back until, by the time Lucifer had to put his hands over his ears to keep out the roar of a billion words spoken at once, he heard, clear as if he was shouting through the echo-prone halls of his own mansion, "What in the absolute fuck are you?" The true Lucifer's head cocked. The words were the exact same he'd spoken, but the emphasis from this copy was shifted to make an almost existential question. He shook his head in disbelief, using his own magics to summon his staff, itself copied to the last detail, nicks and dents and all. "I don't know whose idea of a joke this is," he said, noticing the duplicate's teeth showing in a mocking grin as the word "joke" was uttered. "But the fun's over. Get out!" He aimed the apple-topped baton over the shoulder of his match. While the false Lucifer's teeth disappeared, the smile did not. Instead of doing as it was demanded, it instead began moving in a slow circle around Lucifer, like a predator sizing up a rival. Or prey. It cleared its throat, putting a fist to its mouth politely, before pulling it back, revealing that its tongue in that moment was a morass of writhing tendrils and tentacles before being sucked back into its mouth like a grotesque dinner. "You've got one hell of a hobby, old Scratch." From seemingly nowhere, the sound like a thousand fingernails being raked over chalkboard echoed around him. Lucifer was holding up his staff as if to ward off this thing. Should it come too close, yet it retained its distance, even moving a little further away as it continued. "Just look at all these..." When it looked away, it seemed to almost suddenly realize what it was that the real Lucifer was spending so long doing. When he turned back, he looked over his shoulder at his original with a frown of disdain and pity. "Seriously, duckies?" The fallen angel, still utterly baffled by what he was witnessing, didn't take the bait. "I said, get out." There was the sound of creaking as Lucifer's leathery, taloned hands grasped his staff, his triplicate set of angelic wings slowly sprouting like secretive flowers from his back. "You here to try and take my place or something?" The duplicate, still standing in a relaxed way, faced him and raised his eyebrow as if the notion was foreign to him. "Nah," he said dismissively, taking a moment to look at the mountainous piles of failed or inadequate creations. It was then that its eyes settled on the workbench, the only truly well-lit portion of the chamber, and the object of obsession, pride, and emotion that, to it, shone like a diamond refracting 100 beams of light at once. The toothsome smile returned. "I'm just here to fuck with you." With that, the replicant gave a brilliantly aimed but effortlessly made kick to one of the duckies at the base of the mound he was standing in front of. The bird flew just far enough to impact against the closest other mound, dislodging a few of the creations. Then a few more, jostled loose by the strike, came down as well. Then more and more as the slipshod stability of the mounds was compromised, causing it to topple sidelong in a small avalanche of ducks. It struck against the closest one to it, the force and momentum causing a sympathetic collapse that began to carry over to more and more like dominoes in a quacking roar. Lucifer turned back to see just for the briefest moment the copy of him step into the deluge of falling ducks, disappearing in a yellow morass. He was so briefly dumbstruck that he didn't realize until it was too late that the collapsing towers of ducks were coming like a wave to the workbench. Suddenly dosed with adrenaline, Lucifer's wings unfurled to their maximum, and a hail of quacking objects shot out from behind him as the downdraft of the flapping struck them. He reached out, desperate to see no harm come to the thing he'd worked so hard to build for his little girl. It was all for nothing, though, as the shadow of the wave of crashing ducks gave him only a split second to brace himself before he was engulfed by it himself, and the workbench, just a hand's breadth away, disappeared in a sea of yellow and the unmistakable scent of dense rubber. He burst free from the fallen pile of failures and looked frantically towards where he believed the workbench was under this shoal of ducks. He waded and shoved piles of them away, the howl of their quacking just more noise and distraction. He gasped when he felt the workbench's solidity, and began throwing bunches of the toys aside, every one of them representing months of his time and attention. They didn't matter one iota. There was only one that mattered. When he cleared off what he saw as the dross, he picked through the remaining ones up top carefully, looking over each one for just a moment. A little too heavy, not the right shade of orange on the beak, flamethrower shot out almond milk instead of napalm. His face grew more and more distressed as the table cleared off more and more until finally it was empty. Not a single duck was left, and he didn't have the one. He put a hand over his mouth, almost about to vomit with shock when he heard it. His feet had grazed against one of them, the sound it let out. He dove in like a child in a ball pit, desperate to find his magnum opus. He was drawn to the perfectly calibrated quack like sonar, and soon he reached out and felt it. He rose up again, breathing as if he'd been underwater the entire time, and looked upon it, the perfect symmetry, the just right roundness, and that quack. He hugged it close to him, happy to have...
Get your hands off me bits, you bullockin' twat!
Lucifer felt some kind of unexpected movement in his grasp and tossed the duck he'd found onto the table. The beak of it began to move up and down in a motion he'd never designed. It started laughing, a sound he'd never programmed. Then it began to grow and mutate, its wings expanding past its body and growing out further and further, the perfect yellow marring and distorting into a riotous collage of the most eye-aching colors he'd never known until now. The laugh, at first similar to the sound of the original quack, slowly deepened and gained a resonant, malevolent echo that didn't make the same replying giggle twice. Lucifer shouted out, "Where is it?" His eyes were barely focusing now, almost completely red. The laughing stopped, as if it had just noticed him. Then the thing began to transform once again, shrinking this time, the bright feathers melting like quicksilver into a slinky, low-backed black evening gown. The horns that had sprung up took on a more demure shape, and its toothsome beak became a seductive smile. In a matter of moments, Lucifer was face to foe face with someone he hadn't seen in 7 years.
Lilith?
Indeed, with her lusciously pouty lips, full buxom chest, and lithe arms that anyone would want to feel wrapping around them, was the Sin Mother. At least, it would appear that way were it not for the eyes yet again. The way they shifted back and forth from her haunting spheres to the strange creature's hazy azure, it was clear that it could make the change total if it so chose.
"Right here, hot stuff,"
the false wife of perdition said, biting her lower lip, putting her long arms behind her head and groaning seductively, grasping her ersatz horns.
"Where is it?"
Lucifer said, a pair of nightmare-black horns protruding now from his forehead, a flame conjured from evil itself blazing between their gnarled curves.
"Final warning,"
he growled in a voice that he hadn't put to use in at least 10,000 years. The clone of Lilith looked at him with shock for a moment. Then it put its immaculately manicured fingertips atop its chest, where the dress's plunging neckline met her bust, and began a powerful laugh, one he'd never heard the real Lilith make. As it laughed, the horns atop the copy's head began to pull back, the long hair collecting and tying itself behind the head, which, along with everything else about it, began to shrink. The bodice began to overwhelm the top of it entirely, changing hue to a dazzling red. Lucifer knew where this was going, and shook his head in outrage and disbelief. The laugh went from the full, rich sound of Lilith's to a sharper, perkier cackle. The hand at its chest was now over a black bow tie that topped a red and black coat and white undershirt, red slacks instead of a black dress, and the blush at the cheeks had become a birthmark every bit the same as his own. The same he'd passed on to his daughter, Charlie. She was smiling at him with vicious teeth held in a way that held threat rather than a familial resemblance. As seductive as it had tried being as his wife, it seemed to try even harder in this new form, throwing itself back against the table and posing luridly.
"This more your speed, Daddy?"
Something in that moment snapped in the Prince of Darkness. Any apprehension, fear, or bewilderment was in that moment replaced with an inferno of blue-hot fury. Lucifer swore a dozen times in the moment it took him to dash towards this mocking facsimile of his own child, red hellfire engulfing his fist as he pulled it back and struck down at the mimic, heedless of any damage he might cause. The thing in Charlie's shape kicked backwards, legs hiking up like a gymnast's towards its arms, only for them to fuse, and the image of his daughter became that of a mottle-backed, mutated manta ray with a mouth that nature never gave the real deal, and a dozen manic eyes. This happened in the instant it took for Lucifer's fiery fist to fall, splitting the oak and wrought iron table in two and setting its remains ablaze. The ducts around it, made of various compositions, some more flammable than others, began to ignite in a slowly creeping wall of fire. Lucifer looked up at the flying, screaming sea creature.
"All right, fucko. Two can play that game."
With a puff of magical smoke, Lucifer disappeared, only to emerge from it in the form of a massive eagle. Able to change shapes far faster than this interloper, its unnatural mouth screamed in apparent surprise as it found its tail grasped by sharp talons. Twirling himself about with his well-practiced wings, Lucifer waited until he couldn't feel the thing resisting the rotating spin he was putting on this monstrosity, and released him as soon as he was facing one of the massive marble pillars that upheld the chamber, infinitely more solid than the now collapsed mounds of ducks. It smashed against the baroque beam with a sickening crunch, and a collection of black and blue blood and broken, misshapen teeth were left behind as it slowly dragged down for a moment before falling into the pit of ducks. Lucifer was briefly boastful, at least as much as one could be with only a beak and no other expressive features. Then the ducks, many already ablaze, began to part as something began to rise up. It was immense. Humanoid in shape, but made of massive slabs of intimidating-looking metal. It looked at first like some kind of futuristic knight, But this was no prince in shining armor. The shape was massively bulky, the head of the thing almost looking comically small compared to the rest of it. It had a helmet with glowing, glassy green eyes, tusks like that of an elephant protruding from where the mouth of the slightly elongated mask would be. Over the head was an upturned Nemus headdress, with lapis and gold stripes crowned by a bird skull not dissimilar to the staff it had briefly appeared to possess. One of its arms held a brutal-looking curved blade, one he hadn't seen since the age of ancient Egypt. Of course, the ancient Egyptians' version didn't have a chainsaw roaring inside of theirs. It was the other arm that actually gave Lucifer pause. In it was a long series of tubes held together in a hexagonal ring with a long, ornately decorated lower brace. At the root of it, under the armored monstrosity's elbow, was a hopper or some such that looked like it was holding ammunition the size of a beer bottle. It was then that the tubes, a massive cannon of some kind, began spinning.
Oh, shit!
The crackle of the blaze was drowned out completely by the deafening roar of the multi-barreled gun, the exhaust from its muzzle flash alone setting dozens more of the ducks ablaze. Lucifer jinked and dove, gaining altitude before the brief safety of the pillars before the mass-reactive, explosive rounds made a pathetic joke of the structures. The howl of the gun was echoed by the muzzle of the gun itself, made into the clearly living shape of an avian demon not unlike the Goetians after a fashion. The Morning Star knew he only had a few more of those supports available until he either ran out of them and was torn from the sky, or the building itself collapsed over both of them. As the pillar was chewed away, he made a rapid dive down into the pit of flaming ducks, he himself naturally fireproof thanks to his demonic nature. The only hint the blue and gold metal monster would have as the pillar disappeared in a cloud of fiery powder was the subtle hiss of a forked tongue and the hint of a tail slipping into the pit. Not actually possessing the kind of scanning equipment of the suit he copied, the replicated power-armored behemoth opted to simply aim its cannon down and begin firing blindly into the flaming pit. While the crack and boom of the autocannon was deafening, the mimic still expected to hear at least some kind of howl of the throes of Lucifer's death, or see a pink mist appear as one of its shots would make its terrible mark.
"Hey, dipshit!"
a voice said from behind. It turned on its massive, hydraulic-pistoned legs in time to see a huge, white horse with burning red eyes facing away from it. The creature wildly swung the chain kopesh it wielded, but, without the dexterity or reflexes of the actual warrior it was imitating, the Lucifer horse simply bent its knees, easily avoiding the blow that left its center completely open. It had just enough time to see a pair of horseshoes with the words, "Fuck you," stamped onto them before the world began spinning. With a supernatural strength, many times beyond that of even a real horse, Lucifer kicked the helmet of the armored mammoth thing so hard the helmet was ripped completely off its head, the horns cracking off, sending the remainder tumbling into the flames that began to rise higher and higher, setting the mansion ablaze. Looking back, Lucifer saw no head underneath the helmet, and for a moment wondered cockily if he'd actually taken its head completely off. That's when the mass of exotic metal stumbled and collapsed, dragged down by the weight of the huge cannon. It fell with a colossal crash, and out of the neck of the armor came a gout of glowing, mystical-looking dust. Nothing about any of this made sense, but he didn't have time to consider what was going on before he heard the ducks shifting again. It was him again. His doppel-him, that is. It was grasping at its head, looking disoriented and dazed, a vague impression of a pair of semicircular wounds on his forehead. Lucifer was on it in the blink of an eye, taking it by the throat and holding it aloft in his grip, eyes blazing crimson, teeth ready to rend, claws wreathed in fire, eager to maim. "What shape are you going to shift into when I grab your tongue from the back and pull it out your ass?" Bleeding strange technicolor slime, the thing that wore his face began to bunch up its cheeks, trying to hold something in before tossing its head back and laughing uncontrollably.
sending gobbets of it out that spattered and hissed against the floor. It took a moment for it to come back, looking at him, wiping a tear of laughter rather than pain from its eye.
"I'm gonna remember that one,"
it said, unconcerned about its impending disemboweling. That's when the fire began to move. Lucifer looked around, seeing the flames beginning to arc towards his central point. Tracing it, he saw it's where the creature's blood had struck the floor. Like a pool of acid, it was eating away into the flooring, except instead of melting into one of the floors below, it was creating a rift of some kind. A vast portal of some kind into a pit that he felt no small amount of shock and panic, even seeing in his peripheral vision. It was this that gave the thing the opening it needed, pricking his hand with the dagger it had initially materialized with. Lucifer howled out, releasing the monster, seeing the wound beginning to create splotches of blackening, deeply unnatural tendrils coursing through his hand. He could sense the magics that were responsible for it. He couldn't comprehend it or make any effort to contain it. He knew he wouldn't have time for that. So instead, he let his own demonic fire surge over his arm, burning the relatively weak magic away completely. The rift, even though Lucifer couldn't bear to look at it, was creating a vacuum of no small intensity. The flames on the walls and ceiling began to gutter out, robbed of oxygen and fuel as ducks by their hundreds. No, thousands began to be engulfed by the tear and immortal reality. The most he could do as he fought with his powerful wings to keep him away from being sucked in himself was to look down just enough to see the thing that was still copying him. Though its hair and clothes were flapping madly, and it was being struck by dozens of flaming ducks, it stood at the very edge of the portal as if it wasn't emitting even a breeze. It put its fingers up to its stolen, dark eyebrows and gave him a mocking salute before it began to let its form shift, its back seeming to erupt into a mass of fanged tentacles, burly arms, weeping mouths, and insectile talons. Lucifer watched as his face began to split into sections of limbs so disgusting he looked away, hearing an unutterable roar coming from it as it took a lumbering step back and fell into the void. The suction from the pit became briefly even more intense, and he had to fight now to keep away from it, actively facing away and powering in the other direction. He felt his heart lurch when something wrapped around his ankle, pulling him inexorably in the direction of the pit he knew on some primal level that he, the devil himself, would never return from. He extended his claws, letting them dig as much as they could into the marble, but the material was practically smooth. He scrabbled uselessly after a few feet and felt his grip finally give completely. He knew he was moments away from joining that creature in whatever nightmare it had spawned from when suddenly the tug and pull at his leg was immediately halted, and he felt his lurch towards the abyss obstructed. He looked down for a moment before he heard an ear-piercing howl from a zoo's worth of animals simultaneously, and saw he was standing on the end of a trident that had been hurled with enough power to pierce the limb that had snared him and bury it into the marble flooring. What was left of the protrusion slithered away, and Lucifer looked up to see Charlie, the real one. She was holding onto the entry door, being held by her girlfriend, Vaggie, to keep her from being sucked in as well. The tentacles then sucked themselves back into the chasm, and, with a practically anticlimactic suddenness, it all disappeared. Feeling himself on solid flooring, Lucifer slowly stood up, breathing heavily. The hall was in ruins. The interdimensional portal into that other hell had left a gaping hole in the floor, and most of the lower area had been sucked in as well. The walls all around him were burnt and pockmarked with bullet holes, the columns ruined jags of useless stone. Fortunately, the demonic vacuum had extinguished the fires, though smoke still rose all around them. There were charred, melted puddles of former ducks indelibly fused into the floor, years of progress destroyed for no good. He found himself briefly shocked when he felt himself almost tackled from the side, looking to see his daughter hugging him, tears in her eyes. "I'm so, so sorry we were almost too late," she sobbed. We didn't know what was going on, but then we did when the news choppers started showing the guns going off, and I flew over on Razzle, and now we don't know what's going on because... He put his hand behind her head and gave her a hug back. It's all right, Shar-Shar, he said, looking to see Vaggie shocked speechless behind them, but understanding this was a moment for Charlie and him. You saved me. He let her dry her eyes on his coat for a little before pulling away and running his hands through his hair, the adrenaline gradually beginning to wane. What the hell was all that about? Vaggie finally asked when the sobbing had ceased. Lucifer looked, seeing not a single one of his creations had gone undamaged in some way or another. And his masterpiece! He looked around, frantically wondering where it was, before his eyes focused finally on his daughter. Of all the things he had created in his immortal life, what in the Seven Rings was more important than Charlie? He took her hands, proud of her beyond even his remit as the Prince of Pride. He looked over his shoulder one last time at the wreckage of his workshop before walking away with his family. You know what? It wasn't important. The warp, as it's sometimes known, is a vast dimension made of a psychic mirror of the thoughts and feelings of all sentient life. Over billions of years, it has become full of the stuff of dreams and nightmares. Creatures great and horrible call the warp home and seek at all times to find themselves in the reality that, thanks to their chaotic and incomprehensible nature, they wish to destroy. But in that interim, they exist in that vast ocean of thought and feeling, the Sea of Souls. One of the four greatest of these maligned entities, known to some on the other side as an actual god, made its meat and wine on the stuff of treacheries, deceptions, schemes, and magics. Always in flux, ever unknowable. No two people say its name the same way. No two descriptions could ever give it definitive shape. Understand, then, that what happened in this fraction of a moment of time did, and simultaneously did not, happen. In that blink of the dark reflection of the galaxy's eye, that being chose to see the Sea of Souls as precisely that. Floating on currents of panic, bobbing through waves of elation, it would splash other, lesser creatures with puddles of the mutterings of the hopelessly insane. Some delighted in it. Others were twisted into abominations. It didn't matter to the god thing. It was having a wonderful time in the ocean of infinity. It even had a gift it had been brought for his swim. Every time he played with it, hundreds of psychically attuned beings in the mortal realm would tear at their hair in madness, frothing at the mouth with one word, one sound, uttered between them all until the day of their grateful death.
Quack, 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 quack.